right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Today's guest, I have been waiting to interview, it feels like, for months. I am so excited to have her on the show. Dr. Cleopatra Campervane is a scientist and a university professor specializing in the intersection of reproductive health, human flourishing, and how health is transmitted from one generation to the next. She provides fertility and pregnancy consulting to women and families nationally and internationally through her signature In Bloom programs, Inner Circle, and personalized comprehensive one-on-one consulting. Dr. Cleopatra has conducted research on tens of thousands of women of all colors, ages, shapes, sizes, socioeconomic backgrounds, religions, language preferences, and professions to examine how they transmit physical health and emotional well-being to their children. Dr. Cleopatra's research has been funded by several arms of the NIH, including Child Health and Human Development, Aging, Minority Health, Health Disparities, and Mental Health. Dr. Cleopatra has been cited nearly 800 times in just 5 years in scientific literature and countless times in news and popular literature. Dr. Cleopatra has received numerous honors and awards in recognitions of her scholarship and is also a selected member of the Fulbright Specialist roster. I mean, I can go on and on and on. Over the past 24 years, the Fertility and Pregnancy Institute helps women all over the world reverse reproductive aging, get pregnant quickly and easily, reduce miscarriage risk, and finally have the super baby they have been dreaming of for as far and as long as they can remember. Dr. Cleopatra is the author of the forthcoming book, Trimester to Your Super Baby. And I can't wait to get my hands on it. So without further ado, I would like to welcome this professor, scientist, wife, mother of three, and fierce cheerleader of women to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. And what's so hilarious about all of that is if you see me, I just look like another woman, just like all of you. Thank you so much for that beautiful introduction.
I mean, I just combing through your bio and knowing everything that you've done, I'm like, how do I pick the best pieces of this? I could have talked for 20 minutes. You are just, you've done so much hard work and you're helping so many women in a time where I think, you know, we're all having babies later and we're feeling really nervous about the process. And the more we learn, the more overwhelming it can be. And so many women are using IVF and need fertility help. I mean, how did this story start for you? How did you become so passionate about it? Can you start us out from like the beginning?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you again for the beautiful introduction. And also, the reason why I say at the end of the day, I'm just a woman like everybody else, because I want you to know that no matter who you are and no matter how your life starts, that everything that you want is possible for you, especially when you're deliberate about it and when you keep your faith connected to that deliberate process. I started my life in one of the most rocky manners that you could imagine. I lost my mother at birth. My beautiful mother was 27 years old, pregnant with twins. We are her third and fourth child, so she already had two children, and she died in childbirth completely unnecessarily as a result of poor medical decisions that were made on her behalf. My parents had just come to America. My family didn't have health insurance. My mom was a woman of color. She didn't speak very much English, and she just didn't receive the kind of medical care she should have received and that could have prevented her death. And so my twin sister and I were born emergency C-section as our mother was dying. Basically, we were being born through emergency C-section. And the first 20 years of my life were so challenging. And yet I somehow as a child had the understanding that there was so much in the world and there was so much possible for all of us, and that the time that leads to up to pregnancy and during pregnancy are such a special time that deserve our attention and our protection and our very best resources. And I started informally supporting women during pregnancy, which is hilarious because I was a little girl and I was just completely obsessed with moms and women who would one day become moms. And that informal work turned into formal work a month after my 18th birthday. I started college at the University of Miami. I went straight into a lab studying pregnancy and I've never looked back. And in the past, now it'll be 24 years in September, I have studied over 30,000 women and families and directly supported over 500 families now in having their babies. And it's really just been the work of a lifetime. I love it so much. And I've applied it to my own life and really deliberately prepared for, primestered for, as we say, for my own babies. And I have three delicious super babies who just, they're all born in March, which I planned. Because when you primester, you actually can plan the month that your babies are born. So mine are born in March and they just turned 7, 5, and 2. And we're just living the love every day.
Oh, that's really, really beautiful. I can't imagine the trauma of growing up without a mom. I feel like I know that your story has absolutely informed your obsession and passion behind supporting women to have their healthiest pregnancy and their healthiest delivery. And you are a walking angel. So I'm sorry for the trauma and pain you've had to go through to birth this beautiful life. But we're all really grateful for you. Yeah. And it's really, really special. And it's such a special time for moms. Can you tell me a little bit about the trimester and what that is and what that looks like? I know you have so many programs online and then you also work with people one-on-one, but we all want super babies.
We all want super babies. We all deserve super babies. I always say that we all want a trimester because we want to give our babies that unfair advantage in life. We want every child to have that unfair advantage in life of the very best epigenetic material. So let me explain what that is as I'm collecting myself because I have tears because thank you for that love and those kind words. And I'll just say that we all have the opportunity to experience pain in our lives, and it's really hard. And we all have the opportunity to find our way through that pain and find the blessing in it and how we can turn it into something productive that contributes positively to the soul of the world. And so thank you so much for that. So the trimester is the time leading up to pregnancy, and it's one of the most powerful and magical windows of opportunity we will ever have as human beings. And it's my mission that everybody knows about it and they utilize it to their advantage, to their children's advantage, to their grandchildren's advantage. And when we all do that, it is really the highest form of activism available to us in the world, which we all need now more than ever. Our world needs now more than ever. And we recommend that the trimester be at least 120 days. So if you know that you're planning a pregnancy, we want you to trimester for at least 120 days. There are all kinds of scientific reasons why 120 days is the minimum amount of trimester, but you cannot trimester too much. So, and we actually see a dose response relationship. So more trimester, even more super baby, right? Mentally, physically, their stress response, their immune system, and otherwise. And so you could trimester for 6 months, for a year, for 2 years. More and more, we have women who are coming to us. We call them in the future mamas at the Fertility and Pregnancy Institute. They're women who know they want to be moms in the future, whether it's 10 years out or 5 years out. And they're learning about the trimester and about how to preserve and extend and amplify their fertility so that when they're ready to have their babies, their fertility will still be there for them. Because as you said, so many of us are having children later in life. And there's a lot of fear around that. And sometimes as we get older and we learn more and we hear more, we become even more fearful of the process. And then we hear all these messages about how it's more complicated to get pregnant and to have a healthy pregnancy once you're 35 or you're 40 or whatever the messages that you're receiving. And the truth is that there is a pattern of reproductive health and what we call reproductive span. And then there's a lot of individual variability within that pattern. And there's a lot that we can do as individuals to shape what that pattern looks like for us. And the earlier we start in our reproductive years, the better. So we want women in their 20s and early 30s to learn about trimestering so that when they finish school, when they get to where they want to get in their careers, when they meet their person, they are ready psychologically, physiologically, epigenetically, and in every way.
Wow. So do you break it up into those different buckets and categories when you think about your trimester and how you're preparing your body, like mind, body, and soul almost?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's something called the trimester protocol, and it's a step-by-step system that we teach you. Do it at home. You don't need any medical intervention to be able to do it. And people can use it as an in the future mommy to start preparing for later. Or if they're already what we call a conceiving mommy, who's somebody who wants to have their baby now, maybe they wanted their baby like 5 years ago and they've been struggling to get pregnant, they use the trimester protocol to help to reverse reproductive aging, to restore their fertility, overcome any fertility challenges that they're experiencing, help to reduce the risk of miscarriage and chromosomal abnormality and other kinds of complications, and create positive epigenetic change so that they get to have their super baby. So the trimester protocol is the answer for everybody, whether they're in the future mommy or the conceiving mommy. Where they are in their mommy life cycle, as we call it, will dictate how all in they go on the trimester protocol, right? So if you're somebody who wanted your baby yesterday or wants your baby tomorrow, then you're probably going to go 100% in on your trimester protocol. If you know your baby's still 5 years out, then you might be 80%, use the 80-20 rule, 80% of the time live according to trimester life and 20% give yourself grace and freedom. So,
got it. What are some of the recommendations that you're making for this period of time? Because I know, you know, a lot of us were a little bit older. I'm in my late 30s now, and I want to have at least 2 more children. I have Sebastian. I want to have at least 2 more. Catching up to you, sister.
Yeah.
3 babies, please. I'm getting Chris on board. When I think about like genetic abnormalities that go up with age and like fertility challenges that go up with age, what are some of the tips and tricks that you're using in the trimester to really lower the chances of having a miscarriage and having genetic abnormalities?
Such a good question and so important. Let's unpack that a little bit. So first thing is we teach that fertility is a complex network or system. Doesn't mean it's complicated, but complex meaning if you think about the neural network in the brain or what a cell phone network looks like. So it's not just located in your hormones or your ovaries or your uterus. And so you want to take care of your biological clock and your fertility accordingly. So we represent that complex network or system as the fertility triangle. At the base of the triangle is the psychological, or even more specifically, the psychosexual level. So we're talking about psychology, sexuality, sensuality. The next level is what we call bioecology, the biological and ecological. Ecological refers to the external environment and the internal environment. And then the next level is neuroimmunological, which is having to do with the brain and the immune system. And then the top 2 levels are social and cultural. And those encompass a lot of things. But for example, social has to do with your romantic relationship, or if you don't yet have one, has to do with the messages that you get from your professional network about what will happen to your career when you get pregnant, when you become a mom, when you're taking care of children. What are those messages and how are you internalizing them? The cultural context has to do with different aspects of our identity, whether it's our racial, ethnic, national identity, our sexual orientation, our gender identity, also the intergenerational transmission of trauma, but also of the good things, what we call intergenerational bliss. We talk a lot about intergenerational stress, intergenerational trauma. We've done a lot of research on this in the social and health sciences. In my own laboratory, we've done a lot of research on this, but we can also pass down a lot of good things to our children through our epigenome. So let me talk a little bit about what the epigenome is. So we all have the DNA we're going to have. We can't change our genome, but we can change the way that our genes express themselves and the quality of our genes. And that's partially what creates the process that we know to be aging, and parallel the process that we know to be reproductive aging. So when we want to make sure that we get to have our super baby, when we want to make sure that we have an easy time getting pregnant and staying pregnant, and that we can reduce risk of miscarriage and chromosomal abnormalities, we want to work at the level of our epigenome to reverse aging, to reverse reproductive aging, and to make the quality and expression of our genes the very best that we can, because our children don't just inherit our genome, they inherit our epigenome, and so do our grandchildren. And that is why I always say this is the trimester when we can influence this epigenetic expression. We can do it throughout pregnancy, but during the trimester, we have even more power to do that. That's why I always say this window of opportunity is one of the most important windows of opportunity we will ever have as human beings. And it is our mission at FPI to make sure that every woman, every person knows about this window of opportunity so that they utilize that window of opportunity to their advantage.
Absolutely. So there are so many layers in your triangle of having a super baby.
Yes.
And I kind of want to unpack some of them if we can.
Let's do it. Yeah.
So should we start at the bottom and work our way up?
Yes. It's the bottom. It's interesting, but the levels are sequenced according to their importance or the time that we spend in them. So the bottom is where we spend a lot of the time.
All right. Psychosexual.
Okay.
Let's get into it.
Let's do it. Okay. So this is really juicy. So what's really important to know is that we evolved as human beings in this brilliant way, which is to say that we evolved to ensure our own survival above and beyond everything else. And so our brain and our body, the same parts of our brain and body that are involved in reproduction are also involved in our survival. So when our bodies or our brains feel threatened in any way, they will prioritize our survival and put reproduction on the back burner. So if you're having a difficult time getting or staying pregnant, or you've been diagnosed with some specific form of fertility challenge, the first thing that I want you to ask yourself is where in your life you can feel safer, where in your life you need to feel safer. Is it in the way that you're treating your body? Is it a lack of sleep that's making your body feel threatened? Is it a lack of nutrition that's making your body feel threatened? Is it the way that you talk to yourself, your own thoughts that are making your body and your brain feel threatened? Is it your work environment? Where is it your romantic relationship or the lack of having a romantic relationship? Where in your life do you need to feel safer so that your brain and your body know that it's safe to prioritize reproduction? Because get this, reproduction requires a huge investment of resources. Our brain and body will not allow us to allocate those resources to reproduction if there's any threat. So one of our mantras is, to the extent that it's possible, get out of stress, get out of emergency, get out of trauma, whether it's old trauma or trauma you're living today, and be in peace and in pleasure. And I am somebody who used to think of the word pleasure as something that's like, oh, that's fun, that's sweet, that's optional. Like, so yeah. that is not an essential ingredient of life. And over all of these decades, I now understand that that couldn't be further from the truth. And I always say, treat your pleasure as if your fertility depends on it, because it does.
Wow, that is so powerful. It's amazing how interconnected pleasure and safety are, because without feeling safe, I don't think you would ever feel pleasure. Exactly. You wouldn't relax enough to let yourself.
It's so true. And also, when we don't allow ourselves to experience pleasure, it's harder for us to feel safe, because pleasure is one of the most direct pathways to that sense of release that we can give ourselves, not only in our bodies, but also in the brain and in the central nervous system. So there's a reason why when you have an orgasm, it changes your entire outlook, or when you dance and shake and shimmy. I love belly dancing. I'm Egyptian. Of course, I love belly dancing. I'm obsessed with dancing, but belly dancing specifically. And when you do that, it's hard not to feel peaceful and happy when you get in your body in that way. And it's really important. And there are lots of ways to experience pleasure, but it just so happens that the body is one of the most direct pathways to experiencing pleasure. So it's always a good place to start. If you're feeling stressed and you don't know how to bring more pleasure into your life, start with your body.
That's such an easy applicable tool. I know it's probably difficult if you haven't allowed yourself to experience pleasure, or you're feeling in an unsafe place, but just, you know, not having to think and talk about it, but just saying like, go get in your body somehow, whether that's like being sexually active with your partner or moving your body, it's less thinking, more doing.
So and you know, it's really interesting. So when we talk about pleasure through sexual activity or through orgasm, and we actually teach about the importance of orgasm, female orgasm, for getting pregnant. We know male orgasm is essential for pregnancy to occur, because you need sperm for pregnancy to occur, and sperm happens through male orgasm. It can actually happen outside of male orgasm as well, but we don't think of female orgasm as being essential, because you don't need an orgasm to have an egg, which is the other piece of the puzzle, right? But the reality is that the uterine contractions that happen with female orgasm facilitate the journey of the sperm to the egg. We have these microscopic superhighways that are created from our cervical fluid. It's called an arborization pattern. If you could see a fern and you would see the patterns on the fern, that's what it looks like. And the contractions from orgasm, uterine contractions, propel the sperm forward on these microscopic superhighways. And it's a really long, hard journey that the sperm have to make to the egg. It's like traveling to another continent. And so anything that helps to facilitate that journey is going to assist with achieving pregnancy. So we know that the existence or having the right amount of cervical fluid is really important. The right amount of fertile cervical fluid is really important. And also having orgasm is really important for that purpose. And so we have a very biological reason why we teach about the importance of orgasm. Also because we want to put the amygdala and our other parts of the brain to rest, so that the body and the brain register safety, they register peace, and they register pleasure in order to feel safe, allowing for pregnancy to happen and to be sustained. But another, there's something else that's really interesting about orgasm in females, which is that it's one of the only times the social judgment part of the female brain turns off. And if you think about it, it's so exhausting that we're constantly judging ourselves and other people. And that constant judgment, especially of ourselves, does not allow us to feel safe. And so that's another reason why experiencing orgasm is one of the most powerful things that you could do for yourself, whether it's by yourself, with a partner, however it is, because turning that part of your brain off frees you in a way that you almost never get to experience. We almost never get to experience as a woman. And let me just say that the people who are most likely to judge other people, even if what we see on the surface is that they're judgmental because they're so secure in themselves or they're so confident, they're the people who are judging themselves the most harshly too.
And what a painful existence.
Yes, it is a painful existence. And the thing is that if we're not intentional about it, almost all of us experience some gradation of that. We might not be an extreme on that spectrum. Most of us can identify the people who are on the extremes of that spectrum, but almost all of us are there somewhere. And there's a much, much better way to live and to be.
So true. I feel like as women, we're constantly beating ourselves up and of course, it's going to ripple into judgment elsewhere as well, which is what we need to let go of the most, especially today.
So true. We had a couple's Q&A a couple of weeks ago where we talked about where in our lives and in ourselves, can we mother ourselves more in preparation for our babies, or can we father or parent ourselves more? And the ultimately the answer is the first place to start is in our thoughts, and somehow to figure out how to make our thoughts our best friends, because they are our most constant companion. We have 60 to 80,000 thoughts every single day. That is the equivalent of like 2,500 to 3,000 thoughts per hour. And 80% of them are negative for most people.
That's so exhausting.
It is. So that is the place to start. If you're feeling unsafe, if you're feeling judgmental toward other people, toward yourself, if you're feeling unhappy, if you're feeling burned out, if you're feeling exhausted, a lot of times we think, oh, we need a vacation. We need to take time out. What we really need is for our minds to be more friendly toward us, and for us to be more friendly toward our minds. And that is the place where we can experience the deepest form of rest and rejuvenation.
That's such a powerful, it's just so amazing to me that the bottom of your triangle is this space of safety and self-talk and pleasure. And we're not even talking about your hormones and your eggs and the sperm quality and like all the things where people go clinically to some sort of fertility clinic. But it makes perfect sense on an organism human level.
Totally. And the next level is bioecological. That's where we start talking about hormones and egg health and sperm health. But those also originate in the feedback loops between our psychology and our fertility. Our hormone balance, the balance between our stress hormones and our sex hormones, create the basis for our fertility. And that is a direct result of that first level of the fertility triangle. That's why we start there and we go back to it over and over again. It's really the first two levels where we spend the most time, and then we go up to the three top levels.
Wow. Can we get into the bioecology of everything?
Let's do it.
Egg quality and what are some of the things that you're looking for? I heard you mention that stress hormones, I'm assuming things like adrenaline and cortisol, have an effect on your sex hormones. Can you explain the science behind that for everyone?
100%. So an interesting thing to understand is, and this is directly related to what we just talked about at the first level. And so in many ways, the level, the distinction among the levels is arbitrary because they all seep into one another, just like the distinction between mental health and physical health is arbitrary because you can't have one without the other, and they have feedback loops, et cetera, right? It's the same thing here. So an important thing to know is that our bodies and brains have not caught up to the way we live today, right? Evolution is not equipped for modern life. And specifically our stress response is not equipped for modern life. Our stress response is equipped to deal with the kinds of things that our ancestors long ago dealt with, like famine, having to run from wild animals. Those are called acute stressors. They're extremely stressful. They generally pass very quickly. Once they're gone, we shake it off, we're over it. That's how we are designed to deal with stress. The stress that we encounter today in modern life is what we call chronic stress. And it's the kind of stress that is pretty much constant. It never goes away. There's no quick resolution. It's things like relationships, deadlines, traffic, fertility challenges, finances, social comparison, trying to keep up with what everybody else is doing and has, FOMO. That's the kind of stuff that we are dealing with today. And so what happens is that our stress response and the balance of sex hormones and stress hormones are so out of balance that more and more we are seeing people, women and men, diagnosed with accelerated reproductive aging. We are seeing women who are getting diagnosed as perimenopausal or in early menopause much earlier. Women who are getting tests to examine their fertility, like anti-Mullerian hormone, which is the one thing that they tend to run if you go to your doctor and say, I just want to know what my fertility looks like. And we see anti-Mullerian hormone getting lower and lower, earlier and earlier in what I call the reproductive span. So we see commonly women who are in their 30s who have an AMH or anti-Mullerian hormone level that looks a lot more like they're in their 40s. And this is not just happening to women. In the past 40 years, we have, as a Western society, experienced an astronomical decline in male fertility, in sperm count and sperm quality. And we believe it is a direct result of modern life and the accumulation of the impact of modern life. So we have the issue of chronic stress, and it's biological, it's physiological, it's psychological. It's the way we're eating, the chemicals we're exposed to in our food and in our environment, compounded with lack of sleep, being on devices, having a more sedentary life, having different kinds of stress that don't easily pass, and the kinds of stress that we can't fight, we can't run from, we can't freeze or get under the covers and hide from, which is how our body is designed to deal with stress: fight, flight, or freeze. We can't do that in the kinds of stressors that we face today. This accumulation of factors has made us more sensitive to each individual one of them. And one of the first places we see it taken out on is in our hormones and in our fertility. And this, like I said, this is happening to both men and women. So when you want to improve your egg quality and you want to improve sperm quality, what you have to do is intercept these processes that look like they're just normal life for everybody. In fact, I have a couple I'm working with one-on-one right now, and it's really cute. The man, the first time that we met, he was like, can't we just have sex and have a baby? Like, that's what people have been doing forever. This particular couple is not having fertility challenges. They just came to Primester to do everything that they could to be as physiologically and psychologically ready for having their most super baby they can possibly have. And let me just define super baby, because I think that's really important. So when you hear super baby, In fact, my clients first started saying it. You help us make super babies. You have super babies. And at first I was resistant to using it because I felt like it sounded like inherently it had comparison in it. My baby's better than yours. Her baby's better than somebody else's. And I ended up adopting it, but using it as your super baby. You get to have your super baby, which means not a super baby, but your super baby, which means the healthiest, happiest, brightest, most well-adjusted baby that you can possibly have, given your genetics, the genetics of the other person involved in making the baby, and then the epigenetic expression that we get to affect through the trimester and throughout the pregnancy. So they came to make their most super baby. And he asked me, well, can't we just have sex? Like everything else is done forever, right? And I was like, yes, you can. You can just have sex. But just because everybody else is doing something doesn't mean that it's the best way or that that's what we want to do. In fact, what everybody else is doing has led us to a point in history where for the very first time, life expectancy is declining instead of growing. Since 2014, it's the first time in American history, we live in America and in much of the Western world, where life expectancy is declining for the first time, where the majority of adults are overweight or obese. And that is directly related to this epigenetic change and lack of epigenetic change or negative epigenetic change, the opposite of what we are creating in the trimester. And this is passing down across generations. So it doesn't just stop with you. It doesn't just stop with your baby. It doesn't stop. It goes on for generations. So what I would say is that we need a revolutionary approach to fertility and to the biological clock and to building our families intentionally today so that we don't perpetuate these processes that are now in motion, and they were set in motion decades ago because they were set in motion by our parents and our grandparents. Not to blame them, because they didn't know. They were doing what doctors told them to do, what the state of the science at that time told the doctors to tell them to do, etc. And now we know better. And so we want to do so much better if we're able to.
Absolutely. I even just think about like my grandparents, when you could smoke when you were pregnant and like drink martinis and, you know, and everything was like becoming canned and processed and microwavable. And it really, it was a major departure from traditional eating and like a traditional way of taking care of yourself. Mm-hmm. And you were just told to stuff any stressors you had.
Exactly. And that these conveniences were privileges and they were good things. And now here we are undoing them if we're so fortunate to be able to do so. Those people who have privilege now are going back to the basics. And unfortunately, in places where there isn't privilege, we're still using the things that we now realize are harmful and aren't things that we want to have access to, right? We want to go back to eating simple whole foods with one ingredient. We teach at what we call a minimalist approach to eating at the Fertility and Pregnancy Institute. And it really is about being our most healthy physically and psychologically. It's just being minimalist when it comes to our food, eating very simple meals that contain foods that are just one ingredient, foods that we recognize, restricting the window in which we eat food if we're outside of the fertile zone of BMI. So the fertile zone of BMI is considered 19 to 25. And if you don't know your body mass index, which is what BMI refers to, there's a calculator online that you can use from the Centers of Disease Control to calculate your BMI. And I want to say that first and foremost, at the Fertility and Pregnancy Institute, we are a body positive community. And what I mean by that is I would much rather you be outside of the fertile zone and be in love with yourself than be squarely in the fertile zone and feel disdain toward your body and the way you look and the way you feel. So that I want to make sure that is very clear. I think that you are perfect exactly the way you are. And I want you to love yourself exactly the way you are. And I think that that's going to be so important for your fertility and every other way that you can feel peaceful and experience pleasure in your life. And the scientific research is very clear that there is a fertile zone for BMI. And so that's not a judgment. That is simply what we know from data, that being outside of the fertile zone, whether too low or too high, makes it harder to get pregnant and makes it harder to stay pregnant and makes it harder to have a healthy baby. And we actually see that having a BMI that's below the fertile zone, so below 19, is even more consequential than having a BMI that's above the fertile zone, which is 25. So really, either direction is potentially an issue. So if you're experiencing fertility challenges and you calculate your BMI and you're outside of the fertile zone, that's a really good place to start, because even a change of 5 to 10% of your body weight can make a huge difference in terms of your ability to get and stay pregnant. But if you're underweight and you have too little fat on your body, we talk about fertility body type. So it's not just your, whether you're in the fertile zone. That's the easiest thing to calculate, the first thing you want to look at. But there's also the way that we carry our fat. So if we are someone who tends to carry fat on the midsection, that is known to be much more harmful for mental and physical health, including our fertility. If you're someone who tends to carry fat on your butt and your hips, then you could probably be outside higher than the fertile zone and still be okay in terms of your ability to get and stay pregnant. So you want to first start by looking at where you are in terms of BMI, and then you want to look at your fertility body type in terms of where your fat tends to be deposited on your body.
I find that so interesting, because in my nutrition world, mm-hmm. when we talk about where we store fat, and it's totally parallel to what you just said. And you did reference that there are, like, we know that fat in the midsection is harder on the body in general, not just for fertility, mm-hmm. but it tends to be people who have insulin resistance and yeah. metabolic syndrome, and people who have really varying blood sugar. When I test their blood sugar, you know, these are non-diabetic clients who are maybe with a traditional fertility doctor, and they're looking not to gain a bunch of weight during their fertility injections and the medications, and they're really worried about it. And I'm like the grandma who goes back to eating whole foods and, like, balancing your blood sugar and eating yes. some things just like you.
Yeah.
But it is so true, because you do see that if someone has balanced blood sugar and it isn't so erratic and their insulin sensitivity is high, the fat deposits tend to be more in the butt and hips. And mm-hmm. It's just another reason to kind of keep that balance in your body and with the food that you eat.
Absolutely. And the more stress we experience, and that the more the sex and stress hormones become imbalanced, the more likely we are to get fat deposited on our midsection, which then produces more stress hormones and leads to sort of this difficult cycle that's hard to break. And those same things that you talked about, insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, all of those things contribute to fertility challenges directly. They're known to contribute to fertility challenges. They're more likely, people with insulin resistance and imbalances in blood sugar are more likely to experience anovulation or anovulatory cycles, meaning that they're not ovulating regularly and have all kinds of other fertility challenges, and polycystic ovarian syndrome. They may be more likely to have, because of inflammation and other things, endometriosis, which has an inflammatory root, as well as fibroids. And these are some of the most common fertility challenges that people experience. Also, unexplained fertility, which is one of fertility challenges, what people call it, unexplained infertility. I don't use the term infertility, and here's why I don't. There are very few people in the world who are truly infertile. there are a lot of people who have fertility challenges. And so when we talk a lot about different statistics related to infertility, and I'm putting that in quotes because I don't use that word. And what most people don't know about is a statistic called involuntary childlessness. What involuntary childlessness means is that a married couple between the ages of 15 to 49, I know that sounds crazy to include 15-year-olds, but that's how we do it in the data, because we're looking not just in the Western world, but all over the world where there are different customs, et cetera. So married couples between the ages of 15 and 49 who don't have children, and it's not by choice, it's not voluntary. And that is only approximately 3%. And that 3% is probably the most realistic estimate of true biological sterility or infertility. And so when we talk about 1 in 8 couples are diagnosed as infertile, all of these things, and truly, the likelihood that you are one of the 3% of the world's population who is truly sterile, truly infertile, is so unlikely that I do not want you to label yourself that way. I want you to understand that the label of infertility comes from the need in the healthcare system to have a diagnosis to mobilize treatment. And that is a necessary evil of the healthcare system. But I don't want you to identify with that label. I don't want you to label yourself in that way and come to think of yourself as someone who is quote unquote infertile, because odds are that you absolutely are not infertile. You may be experiencing conditions of subfertility as an individual or as a couple. So we know that fertility challenges are evenly divided as originating in the female and the male, is assuming it's a heterosexual couple, even though we almost always look at the female first in Western society and pretty much any society I've ever been exposed to. It's equally likely to be originating in the female, the male, and so 30%, 30%. And then the other 30% is at the couple level, which nobody ever talks about, but is essentially that the combination of the two people together results in conditions of subfertility. It doesn't mean that you chose the wrong person. People have asked me that. Doesn't mean I shouldn't have married this person. It doesn't mean that. It just means that together there's subfertility. Perhaps if you were partnered with somebody else who was extremely fertile, you'd never even realize that you had conditions of subfertility because they push you over that hump and make it easy to get pregnant and have a healthy baby. But together, you're experiencing subfertility. And then 10% is what we consider to be unexplained fertility challenges. And some portion of that 10% is probably also couple level subfertility, but we can't pinpoint the origins of it. And so that's why it's considered unexplained fertility challenges or infertility, as people call it. So I want you to know, if you're somebody who's been diagnosed as infertile, that the odds that that diagnosis has anything to do with you is they're so small. In fact, there's nothing else in the world that has only a 3% likelihood of success that you would invest any attention or effort in whatsoever. You would never get married if you only had 3% chance of staying married. You would never invest money in a business if it only had 3% chance of being successful. You would never start a degree if only 3% of people were going to graduate. We would never identify with something that has 3% likelihood of success. And so I want you to understand that you do not need to identify as being quote unquote infertile if you have received that diagnosis. Just know that it's the way that our healthcare system works to mobilize treatment, but do not internalize that label.
There's so much hope in that, because I've had so many people that I've worked with who are seeking fertility treatments, and they're they've barely had their first appointment and they're like, I'm infertile. And I'm like, wait a second. But to hear you say that, it's only 3%. It's you cannot identify with that, and you have to hold out hope and you have to keep looking for the answers, and they may be higher up your triangle, right? Yes,
so. Exactly. That's exactly right. And that, I think that's another, this is such a good point. And I just want to stress this, that a lot of the triangle you can't outsource. It's yours. It's yours to do. And it's easy for us, especially when we have resources and we're ambitious and we like to look for solutions right away. It's easy for us to want to throw money at problems and throw money at our challenges to make them go away. And it's the same thing as eating well and exercising. Nobody can do those things for you, no matter how much money you have, no matter how privileged you are. It's up to you to do. And so I'm so thankful for IVF and other forms of medical intervention that allow people to have their miracle super babies and that allow us to have children much later, etc. But I want you to understand that those interventions circumvent the challenges. They don't address the underlying challenges. If you're going to utilize those technologies and you want to help to maximize the likelihood that they'll be successful, the work is still yours to do. And the triangle is still yours to go through. There's nobody who can do that for you. There's no IVF doctor. I can't even do it for you. I can teach you what to do, but I can't do it for you.
Yeah, that's so true. It's the work. You have to do it, right?
Yeah.
So can we get into a couple more of the levels of your triangle? So we go into neuro and immunological.
Yeah.
So what are we looking for there?
This is very important. So first thing is that neuroimmunology has to do with the brain and the immune system and the intricate relationships between the two. And they're not distinct from the psychology level in reality. So I just want to emphasize that. But what's important to know here is that your brain is one of your most important fertility organs. And yet when you go to seek help, no one talks about your brain and how important it is. And we know that the vast majority of miscarriages happen as a result of chromosomal abnormality. And chromosomal abnormality starts with sperm quality and egg quality that come together to form the embryo. And that again is something we can't outsource. IVF can test your embryos to see if they're genetically normal and only transfer the ones that are genetically normal. But IVF cannot help you to produce more genetically normal embryos. That is your work to do in the trimester before you even go into IVF. So if you're going to do IVF, you're going to get your eggs collected to have babies later. Treat your IVF date, your egg collection date, your egg retrieval for egg freezing, IVF, whatever procedure you're doing, as your pregnancy date. So you're going to trimester for at least 120 days before that so that you actually have eggs and or embryos that you can use. And ideally, if you have a male partner who's contributing sperm, he's trimestering with you because his sperm are half of the equation. I often get the question, are dads as important? And I always say that they're half the equation. They're at least half as important. And there's actually a study that came out recently that showed that dads who drank alcohol in the 3 months before getting pregnant had a baby that was over 50% more likely to have a congenital heart condition than dads who did not drink prior to in the 3 months prior to the pregnancy. Now, then that number for the moms who drank in the 3 months prior to the pregnancy was about a third of the effect of the dads. So that's an incredible example. Nobody would ever think that. You would always think it's the mom who has to get healthy before getting pregnant. In this case, the impact of the dad was significantly greater than the impact of the mom even. But as a general rule, I want you to think of them as being approximately equal. Now, the truth is that I've learned over more than two decades of doing this now that we don't serve anybody by forcing someone to primester. And so there's usually a stronger commitment of the woman than the man if it's a heterosexual couple. We work with all formations of family, all couples, all genders. We are the most inclusive space you can find. It's our number one of our core values. It's in all of our core values. So we don't assume it's a man and woman, but we talk about the contribution of the DNA, the DNA from the sperm and the egg. So that's when the man and woman come up. And so what we know is that usually the person providing the egg and or the uterus is more invested than the person providing the sperm, but that we take you through a process of inviting your partner to primester with you. And the way that we do this is we use the scientific data to show the partner how important their contribution during the primester is to the eventual outcome of having their super baby, which everyone can agree that that's what they want when they're deciding to have a child. So we help you by taking the emotion out of the decision-making process and helping to guide you in communicating with your partner. And we send weekly partner messages for any partner who wants to receive the weekly partner messages where we say, hey, this week we're working on the neuroimmunological level of the fertility triangle. This is what we're focusing on specifically. This is what your partner is going to be doing. This is what she might be going through emotionally or physically or otherwise. You can support her. And if you want to contribute yourself, here's what you can do. And that's the way that we help to guide the partner. And some partners are all in and they're going through everything with their partner, and some just really aren't interested in doing it. But I have to say that what happens more often than not is that you see these amazing changes in your partner. They look healthier and more energetic and like flyer than ever, and they're glowing and their moods are stable. And then you're like, wait, I've seen some of that. Like, what's happening over there? And so then they tend to become more engaged as they see the transformation in their partners. And for sure, the people who've had fertility challenges, they come in with a higher level of investment than the people who are primestering to make sure that they get to have their super baby independent of having experienced any challenges. So I'll just say that. So all of that was coming back to miscarriage having to do with chromosomal abnormality the majority of the time. And that's one of the things that we can impact in the primester. So approximately 60% of miscarriages happen due to chromosomal abnormality. But a large percentage of miscarriages also happen as a result of immunological factors. And so this has to do with inflammation in the body, anywhere that there may be a latent infection that we're not aware about. The mouth happens to be incredibly important for fertility and pregnancy outcome. Almost nobody talks about this, but the scientific literature is very clear that having problems with your oral health, whether they're known problems or unknown problems, can greatly affect your fertility and your likelihood of having a healthy baby. In fact, we know that oral infections, latent infections, anywhere in the body, but especially in the mouth, can lead to miscarriage, to preterm birth, to all kinds of things. So one of the things that we're doing at the neuroimmunological level, in addition to working more on this idea, our one of our fundamental mantras of be out of stress, out of emergency, and out of trauma, and in peace and pleasure as much as you can. And of course, that starts in the brain, in the hypothalamus, in the pituitary gland, which initiate the production of our stress hormones and our sex hormones and start the process of our body's stress response. So as I said, again, they're all interconnected, right? but also making sure that our immune system is as healthy as possible, that our immune system isn't wrongly rejecting and the implantation of an embryo, the growth of a baby, that we keep inflammation at bay. We all have some degree of inflammation, and even some degree of inflammation is adaptive. But when inflammation starts to overload our bodies, it can be much harder for us to get and stay pregnant and have a healthy pregnancy. There's an extensive research literature on the role of inflammation in fertility and pregnancy outcomes. And inflammation is the underlying root cause of, as I'm sure you see in your nutrition work, of a lot of common fertility challenges. I mentioned some of them before, including endometriosis and fibroids. And I want to say something really important, which is that we've talked about how our modern life contributes to accelerated aging and accelerated reproductive aging. And the scientific literature is very clear that this is even more the case for women of color and women with other kinds of minority identities. So women from the LGBTQIA community, women who are single moms deciding to have children on their own, women who experienced trauma and abuse as children. We know that these stressors contribute to inflammation. They contribute to this dysregulation of the hypothalamic pituitary adrenocortical axis, which is involved in the body stress response, or regulates the body stress response through the adrenal glands and the production of stress hormones, and creates wear and tear on the body. And we see accelerated wear and tear on the bodies and the reproductive systems of women with minority identities. So we see even more accelerated menopause, lower AMH levels, which we talked about before, anti-Müllerian hormone levels in women of color. And so it's actually important to note that you can find age-adjusted recommended levels of different hormones, but you should be looking for tables that account for race and ethnicity and other aspects of identity, because it matters for what is considered a normative level of different hormones at different ages.
And that's really looking at the top of your triangle, your social, mm-hmm. your social, your economic and your cultural levels, right? That's looking at that like top layer of stressors and what we're seeing on a like a bioecology side based on race and based on on the pressure, maybe financial pressures that you have and ethnic pressures or ethnicity. Mm-hmm. What levels would, if you were to generalize, like say someone's 30 or 35 years old, like an AMH level, someone getting that tested and maybe getting their inflammation levels tested and their sex hormones tested just with a regular OB, like, hey, I might want to get pregnant in 2 to 5 years before they come see you.
Yeah.
One, are there like couple markers you think people should be looking for? And then what can we do? Is there an ability to influence AMH? Can you see it change in the opposite direction? Because I'm thinking about women of color, and I'm thinking about people who are at financial disadvantages and have these stressors that are, you know, are really unfair. And if it's financial, for example, or you know, just cultural, where they have these pressures that maybe other people don't have. Like, what can we do to support them? What can we do to? How can I help them through you influence their AMH so they have better outcomes?
These are such important questions. Thank you for asking them, Kelly. So first of all, there are things we can do. We work with women with low AMH every day, women of every color. We now currently have women primestering with us in 18 countries on 6 continents. We cover dozens of the world's languages and religions. I'm so proud of that. I speak a lot of languages myself. You'll hear me say words in other languages in the Primester protocol, and then I tell you what they are. And And so this is really important to me. So we can improve AMH levels, and we see it every day through trimestering and working at each level of the fertility triangle, that AMH and all of our other hormone levels and all of our other indicators of our fertility system, we use both static and dynamic indicators, can improve and do improve through trimestering. So I want you to know that if you feel like you've tried everything and nothing has worked, until you've addressed your full fertility system, don't believe the hype that you've tried everything. It is still possible for you. It is still possible for you. We routinely have women in their early to mid 40s. Our oldest client has been 47. We've only had one 47-year-old. We haven't had anybody older than that yet. But we've had a handful of 46-year-olds. We get 45 and under all the time. So whatever you're hearing, I want you to know it doesn't have to be your truth, because what you're hearing about is what happens in the normal curve on average, and trimestering is a whole other scenario. So that's the first thing. That's possible for you, whether you have every privilege or you have a lot of odds stacked against you. And I teach about being super fertile. And when you're super fertile, it means your fertility gets to work for you against pretty much any odds. It means that things don't have to be perfect and your fertility can still be amazing. And that can be that you have minority identities, you experience a lot of stress, you have financial challenges, your thyroid doesn't work, you have a genetic disorder, all of those things. And we know from the scientific literature that women who experienced high adversity in childhood, which is disproportionately experienced by women who don't have a lot of socioeconomic resources and women of color, are more likely to have fertility challenges in adulthood. And yet I think I'm the perfect example. I mean, my adversity in childhood and really for the first two decades of my life was off the charts, like so high. It was constant vigilance to survive, basically. Even when I was already getting my education and really starting to make a difference in the world, I was still dealing with some complete chaos from where I started in my life. And I got pregnant on the very first try with each of my three babies. I planned for them to all be born in the same month. And I had my babies later in life. I was almost 35, 37, and 40 when they were born. And we're considering having a fourth baby. I'll be 42 this summer. If we have a fourth baby, I'll be giving birth probably right before my 44th birthday, because I'll probably plan to have the baby born at the same time of year again. And so I just want you to know that no matter where you start and no matter what you go through, that having a beautiful life, like it's like what I said at the beginning, like don't be fooled by all of those accomplishments. Like I struggled my butt off just like you. And it's having a beautiful life and having a beautiful family and having a perfect super baby, your perfect super baby is still possible for you. And it's especially still possible for you when you're willing to dive in, get in there, do the work, and do the work from a place of flow and ease instead of pushing hard. It doesn't have to be that kind of work, because that pushing hard is depleting us further. And so that's not the answer. And trust me, for a lot of my life, I thought that I could just overcome everything from pushing harder, working harder. And what I've learned and through my own life and through now, while having walked intimately with so many people from so many different parts of life, that we can do the work, but do it from a place of grace and ease and positive expectancy, and start with how loving we can be to ourselves.
Gosh, that's so beautiful. Thank you for sharing. I feel like for anyone listening, if they're going through fertility challenges, this is going to be such a bright light for them and definitely change their mindset. I want them to have access to you. I want them to know where to follow along, where they can join your programs. Like, where can they find you?
So I want to say we right now, as Kelly and I are recording this, we're going through a really difficult time in our world. And it's not that anything new is happening in our world, but it's coming to the surface and people are stopping and listening and paying attention, which I'm so happy about. And one of the things we always have scholarships available for the Primester Protocol for people who need them. And I want to make that clear that if you're somebody who wants to Primester, needs to Primester, and you don't have the resources, reach out to us for a scholarship, number one. And we will be giving away $10,000 in scholarships within the next week, specifically for women who are working to create change in the world. And we want to hear about how they're working to create change without letting that work change them. Because again, it's that pushing that I don't want taking away from people's fertility. So that's what we want to support at this moment. So there's that. And that's always available. We have even more available right now, but that's always available, number one. And number two, we have this amazing fertility checklist. And it's free. It's available to all. You can download it. It's at fertilitypregnancy.org. And it has 10 amazing, juicy secrets. And we walk with you through how to use them. So no matter where you are in your mommy life cycle or your reproductive span, get the fertility checklist. Start utilizing it because you will learn things you've never known about your fertility and that nobody's ever talked to you about that's related to your fertility. And the other thing is that if you are somebody who is not yet ready to have your baby, but you want to start learning about your biological clock and your fertility, we have something really amazing. It's called the Get Pregnant in No Time formula. And it's one piece of the full protocol. And what's really powerful about this is that it allows you to identify your fertile window with the most perfect precision humanly possible without ultrasound. There's nothing like it. Now, here's the thing. You can use it for birth control if you are willing to be impeccable, because I don't want you to have any surprises.
Yeah.
It was designed to help people get pregnant and time their pregnancy. It's the step that I use to time my babies to be born in March. But you can also use it as a form of birth control. And it's really the only form of birth control that is, number one, this precise and doesn't use hormones and doesn't mask or harm your fertility in the process. So what's so amazing about this is you prevent pregnancy until you're ready. In the process, you're learning your biological clock and your fertility like the back of your hand, so that when you're ready to have your baby, you can use it, have your baby, it's perfect. It doesn't change your fertility, this piece of the protocol. It only allows you to know it perfectly. So if you want to ignite or overcome fertility challenges or preserve your fertility, you need the full Primester protocol. But if you just want to learn your fertility and prevent pregnancy until you're ready, you can use that as well.
So awesome.
Yeah.
Such juicy yes. free information and yes. tips.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Okay. So where are you on social media? Where can we follow along? And what is the best website if people want to come take your programs?
Okay. So they can come to fertilitypregnancy.org. They can get the free checklist there. They can also enroll in the Primester protocol. They can sign up for the Get Pregnant in No Time formula, everything that you could want. You can find there. If you want to follow us on social, you can follow me at Dr. Cleopatra, Dr._Cleopatra on Instagram. We're at the Fertility and Pregnancy Institute on Facebook. And we also have a Fertility and Pregnancy Institute on Instagram as well.
Oh, it was such a pleasure to have you. I feel like I have so many more questions. We could probably talk for hours.
Yes, I know. Well, I'd love to do it again.
Yeah, I would. I mean, we'll probably get so many such great feedback. People will want a part two. So stay tuned.
Awesome.
But what I'll get from you is maybe a couple of the markers and AHA levels and things that maybe people should be looking for. I'll get a link to that. Your free checklist.
Absolutely.
Where people can find you in the show notes.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, we end every podcast the same way. And the question is, what does body love mean to you?
Body love means to me loving yourself exactly the way that you are right now. It's kind of like our family motto and our family culture. So just like we're so deliberate about creating epigenetic change during the trimester, we have programs for each stage of the mommy life cycle. And in Super Baby, our pregnancy and parenting program, we teach about intentionally creating the family culture that you want to have. And my husband and I, our family motto is be in appreciation and stay hungry at the same time. And when I think of body love, I think of that motto. So it's even if you want to continue working on being healthier and healthier, being your best self, start by being so in love with who you are right now and where you are right now and improve from there. Don't improve from a place of pushing against yourself and trying to be something you're not. I feel like nobody taught me that when I was little, and I spent a lot of years trying to learn how to overcome my weaknesses instead of focusing on my strengths and really like amplifying those. And now I understand that starting with where we're already strong and then just getting better and better is really where it's at. So that's what body love means to me, and every kind of love, really.
It's such a profound way to think about it, because you're using the love to fuel your motivation, to find more ways to grow and love yourself even more.
Yes.
Awesome. Gosh, it was such a pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you so much, Dr. Cleopatra. I know that people are going to want more from you. You're just a light. And thank you for sharing the differences you see in AMH levels based on cultural and economic differences. I think it's really important. I'm learning right now in this time so much about that. And you're a resource for that. And I really appreciate that. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for providing this amazing space for women to learn and share. And I'll just say one more thing on that, which is that these are not differences that we imagine based on the way people look. They're differences that are observed and documented using the scientific method. And so we can honor them in the way that we take care of people and take care of ourselves.
Yeah, we have a responsibility to affect change in that space for minorities and women of color and people who don't have financial privilege. So I'm really happy to help you and support you make change. So thank you.
Thank you. Oh,
such a pleasure to talk to you. So excited for this episode to come out. Like I said, I know they're going to want more, but we'll schedule that when we could be in person together and give each other a hug.
Thank you for listening to Be Well by Kelly. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at bewellbykelly.com and follow me on Instagram at bewellbykelly. I would love if you picked up my books, Body Love and Body Love Every Day. They're sold on Amazon and at all major booksellers.